welcome to the Canine Conservationists podcast, where we are positively obsessed with conservation detection dogs. Join us every other week to discuss detection training, canine welfare, conservation biology, and everything in between. I'm Kayla Fratt, one of the co-founders of Canine Conservationists, where we train dogs to detect data for researchers, land managers, agencies, and NGOs. Today, I am super excited to be talking to Natasha, who runs NHU Ecology and Detection Dogs, which is a newly formed ecology service with over 4 years' experience in ecological surveys and over 3 years' experience in training and handling detection dogs. Natasha has completed and continues to attend rigorous training courses to ensure both handler and dogs meet industry requirements for competency, and continues to develop her continuation in personal development by shadowing experienced wildlife detection dog handlers and attending courses, conferences, and training events with a strong view that learning and personal development should be continuous. Natasha and I have been connected online now for a while, kind of through, you know, just through Instagram conservation dog world. It's not that big of a world. And Natasha has also taken advantage of some of the offerings that we've got at Canine Conservationists. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about today with Natasha is something I really, really admire about her, which is that she's kind of constantly doing continuing education. So we're going to be kind of diving into some of the things that she's taken away, things that she may recommend, courses that you may want to learn about, and all of that. And we're also going to talk about some of her amazing dogs, because Natasha is also pretty cool in this industry for working with quite the variety of breeds for a single person. So with all of that, Natasha, I'm so excited to talk to you. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the dogs that you share your life with, and we'll kind of jump into breed from there.
Yeah, hiya. I'm Natasha. I'm a trained ecologist, newly trained detection dog handler. I mean, where do I start? So the dogs that I've got currently, three dogs. I've got River, my Dalmatian, Wren, a working Cocker Spaniel. And I've also got my boyfriend's dog, which is Molly, a Springer Spaniel. So I have River, who was my first, as I would say, trial dog. She was a bit of a guinea pig. Mm-hmm. She's sort of the pet that tries everything out, the new dog that I'll, if I do something wrong, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. She's the first dog I trained in scent detection. She's taught me how to build the drive, train the indication, read her body language on and off odor. She's won many scent work competitions, because I did quite a few scent work competitions with her, from scent ops and detection dog trials in the UK, which are more operational styles, less so than finding lots of hides. We've only got one or two maybe out, and then as you get higher up, you don't know how many hides are out. And in 2022, she won her High Peak Award, which was the highest scoring dog of the year. So she beat everybody wow. in that year, which was pretty impressive for the Dalmatians out there. I did have high hopes that I could even get her at operational level. So we did push her, and we pushed ourselves as a team, worked longer, more complex searches. Rough terrain. However, the more I pushed her, the more I realised River and her poor injury couldn't keep up with the physical demand of operational work, and this did affect our performance. So River's got an injury in her paw. She did it when she was a bit younger, when she was a pup. She twisted and she had a fracture of a really small bone. It's called the sesamoid joint. Mm-hmm. In her paw, and when she was taken to the vets, they didn't pick up on it at the time, and I pushed and pushed, and it took a year to get her diagnosed, and by then it's already arthritic, so surgery wasn't an option. So at the moment she's got an arthritic paw, and pushing her to do such a physical, because it is physical,
it is, yeah,
conservation side of everything. It's rough terrain, it's climbing, it's difficult on the dogs and their bodies, and you want a dog that's physically fit for the job. So from that, I pulled her. I couldn't push her. She doesn't owe me anything. She's, you know, she's a Dalmatian, she's a pet dog, she doesn't really need to prove anything. So she can still do normal dog activities. I do Canny Cross and things with her, as long as I'm not pushing her every day, like operational is going to be.
Right, yeah.
So we, with her, we're sort of putting scent work competitions on hold and chasing a new challenge at the moment with her, man trailing, where I'm starting to still work her brain and her nose, but as well as me being able to learn and handle her in a different way using scent. So it's been really eye-opening doing the man trailing with her, because it's so different from area searches. So that's why she's a great guinea pig dog, because you just throw her into these situations. She's like, yeah, I'll do it. And yeah, it's learning from her is brilliant, because she's such a expressive dog, especially with scent. She's just so easy to read and such a great beginner dog. So I've been quite grateful with her.
Yeah, that is so cool. I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt because I've got like four things I want to chase down, and we will get to Ren and Molly as well. But I mean, yeah, I've got so many questions that we'll get to about, you know, the differences in the breeds. I've never worked with a DAL. Like, I've trained them in shelter context before, but I've never worked with one through a working context, and I've no idea what they're like. I've never had one in any of my classes. But I definitely will want to come back as well to the man trailing and some of the work you've been doing there, because I've been having a lot of fun watching you do that online. And I was just out today. I've got a friend whose cat slipped out the door and is missing. And we took the dogs out, and my dogs are not trained to track or anything like that, and they're not trained to find cats. But I was like, you know, we can take them out in the woods behind your house, and if there's a carcass, you know, they'll show interest. And if there's a live cat, they'll show interest. And, you know, I just spent the whole time tromping around being like, God, I wish I would train my dogs to track, because it would be so nice to be able to help in this situation more than what I was actually doing. So yeah, I'm really excited to hear more about River. But I'll stop interrupting you and you can go to Rent now, and then we'll jump back into all of those different threads that I want to pull on.
Bro, so I'll start with Ren.
Yeah, go for
Ren.
It,
Ren. Yeah, I got her in 2021, and I was aiming to get Springer, but one thing led to another, and a little cocker puppy was there instead.
What is that story? How did you why Springer over Cocker, and how did you end up accidentally getting a Cocker?
Yeah, I was talking to a breeder, and I was all lined up for a nice Springer, and then I was taken to see a cocker puppy instead, and it was something about her. She was quite independent, and I quite liked it. But she had something about her that was just, she didn't like people, and I just thought, oh, you poor puppy. Let's help you out and just take her on and see what happens. Because I like the mum and I like the dad. So I thought, well, we'll see what happens with her. And oh my God. she's taken me on a huge journey in regards to dog training and thinking outside the box for training, because this little lady, for the first 16 months of her life, we struggled with over-arousal during search, and simple act of sniffing drove her over the threshold in terms of the excitement levels. Like a blade of grass, you know, anything, just like a football pitch. This dog was in just a manic state of like, I've just got to sniff. Amazing search drive, but it was trying to bring her back in, reel her back in, and try and get her to work with me rather than just being Miss Self-Employed. I'm going to do it all by myself.
That is the thing that scares me about Spaniels.
I think it's more cockery. It's definitely a cocker thing more than a Springer thing.
Interesting.
That's why I wanted to go for a Springer for my first Spaniel, because they seem to be more biddable in that way. But obviously you've got variation within breeds. You get some cockers that are really biddable, and then you get some Springers that are really independent. But from what I've seen, the Springer's just a little bit more reeled in, tamed, than the cockers that are just like frantic. But a lot of training and exposure on a long line with her, building up her obedience and her listening skills in lots of different environments was key for her, and playing in lots of different environments. So I would start out in the house. Then we would move to a car park because there was no vegetation, nothing for her to sniff too much. And then we would move into the garden because the garden was extremely exciting because we'd be back onto a woodland. So we have all sorts of smells in the garden. And then I would build it up from there. So move it into different places, woodlands, fields, you know, make it more difficult for her. And just, yeah, building on that environmental stuff with her for the first year and helping her develop her control and regulate her emotions and letting her do what she loved, sniffing, but also having her listening ears and her mind switched on and not being just frantic all the time. So between her first and second birthday, we did a lot of gun dog training. So I did a lot of gun dog training with her. And a lot of detection dogs, people are kind of like, no, you don't want all that control. You don't want to have them like looking at you and stuff. But for Ren, it was extremely important we had a bit of this.
Totally.
Yeah. So we did do a lot of gun dog training to get the clear communication, build on that obedience, emergency stops, those important things like directions and working as a team. That was a big thing for Ren.
I mean,
she's
it's
so
all
independent.
Balance. So, you know, I know, like with my border collies, I'm constantly thinking about building independence and building that ranginess and getting them to go out. And, you know, I think I've talked about this before on the show when I was looking at the litter of puppies that Niffler came from. He was the puppy that the first time they ever went outside, he just like boldly marched off into the wilderness and was fully ready to make himself into hawk food. And I was like, okay, that's the one I want. But if I was looking at a litter of cockers, I'm not sure that's the puppy I would have picked. I would have maybe picked the puppy that was most interested in me.
Yeah, the smart person would do, yeah.
Right, yeah, which actually, I'm kind of curious. When you say she didn't like people, was she just kind of like aloof and disinterested, or was she actively kind of nervous with people?
Yeah, she was nervous. Proper tail underneath her. Yeah, she's really in a bad place with people. And the breeder had a setup going as a therapy dog, and I thought this dog cannot be a therapy dog.
No way.
Because she needs her own issues sorted before she can help someone else with their issues. So that was definitely not the right thing for her. And I just thought, you know what? She's going to do okay with me because I'm not going to give up on her. And luckily she has turned out quite well. For the first year I was in a few moments where I was nearly in tears because it was just so difficult getting this dog.
Oh my God, we've
just
all been
like
there.
Me. And just work with me and listen to me. But after she turned two, there was so much massive improvements with her. Honestly, she, I started taking the scent work out to new places. After she could do all the obedience stuff in those places, I could start taking the scent work stuff, and she was more biddable. I could take her to higher, like what I would consider higher arousing environments, and she would listen and be able to do a stop whistle. And if she could do all of that and take food, that was another thing. She was so highly aroused, she would not take anything, like food-wise, cheese or anything. So I can always test her. If she takes a bit of food, which is normally everywhere now, I know she's got her brain switched on, which is a nice way of testing.
Yeah,
she's got a healthy level of arousal. We've got that communication now. She can think, stop and think and problem solve. So at a time when you're in that high arousal state, she's not going to think, she's not going to stop and think and problem solve. They just go bulldozing through and they don't take that time. And sometimes they can get quite frustrated, especially for a little cocker that wants everything 100 miles per hour. Yeah. If she's got to stop and think, it becomes really frustrating because she can't do it 100 miles per hour. But now at this stage, she's at the point where she's, you know, a healthy level of arousal. She's be able to communicate. She's actually now at a level where I reckon she is operationally ready. So we've started to imprint her onto things, so like Bat and Bird, and hope to be assessed externally when we're ready. So that's quite a nice ending to the horrific story it was at the beginning.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, gosh, the journey, we should do a whole like adolescence series where people just talk about their dogs. And particularly, I think between like 1 and 3 years, for me with Niffler was a lot rougher than I expected. I think I kind of had the idea that it would improve more after his first birthday than it did. And it really took more like to his third birthday to really start seeing that. And it's tough. Yeah. It's just,
it takes time. It's a long road.
Yeah.
It does take time, especially if they've got other things going on in their heads. And if they're so high drive, I mean, little Ren, she's the search drive in her to just put her nose down. At the beginning, it was for no reason. She just loved doing it. But now she's got a purpose. It becomes more meaningful for her. But it is so nice to see her work and enjoy her work and have that sort of bond and communication between us now because it's so strong. It is lovely to see the improvement we've had throughout these few years.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's really worth it, but it is, it can be a long, hard road. And we've got, we'll do like a lifetime series, I think this year, because I've also been thinking a lot about washing dogs and, you know, career changing dogs. And we're trying to get a couple episodes organized on that topic, which is something I'd love to circle back to as far as River goes as well. And retiring dogs, because I'm starting to think about that with Barley. You know, he's 10 years old. Every season that we work is very potentially his last at this point. And there's just a lot to be thinking about over the career of our dogs. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Amali and then we'll dive back into all of those other things. We've got so much to cover today.
Yeah, so Molly is my boyfriend's dog. She's a Springer Spaniel. She's coming up 2 years old now, and I tell you what, she's a textbook dog. She's lovely. Honestly, after having Ren and then having a go with Molly, it's lovely to have a bit of a textbook dog that you can just start from scratch and train. She's currently being trained on Kong and potentially be used in the future when the right project comes along. So we haven't got anything really set up for her at the moment. We're thinking maybe bed bugs or something like that, something different for her. She's
Did you pick your boyfriend because he's got a Springer that wants the job, or how did that happen? I'm like, I would like that. I would like a partner who comes with a Springer Spaniel.
he had her, and she was never going to do anything. I hadn't we were together for a year, and I hadn't even done any scent work with her. And just one day, she bulldozed out the front door, following Ren, who was doing a training search on Kong. And she bulldozed her way out. She was like, "I'm not having any of this. I'm going to do it." And I'm like, "Well, you can search, but you're not even on Kong, darling. So you can just carry on." And lo and behold, she found the Kong. She didn't know what to do with it, but she found the Kong. And she goes, "Well, this is what you're looking for." And she's so funny. And I take them out for walks. So I take River and Molly out for a walk, and I'll place out some scent for Ren to then find afterwards. So I'll take her out separately. And I'm walking along and I turn around and Molly's got something in her mouth. I'm like, "What have you got in your mouth?" She goes and spits out a bit of Kong. I'm just like, "Okay, maybe you want to find
then.
Maybe we should teach you an indication rather than you trying to pick everything up and moving it about."
She decided
she wanted to do some scent work. So I've just been playing about with her. And she loves to search. She loves to find a tennis ball. She's, you know, that textbook driver of a spring spaniel. Loves her ball. Loves to search for a ball. She's extremely biddable compared to Ren. Like, she always wants to know what you want her to do, which in a way can be a bit, like, for me as a detection dog handler, I want her to have a bit more independence to just keep searching without me needing to tell her where to go. But there you go. It's tit for tat. You've got one or the other. So we can work on getting Molly a bit more independent where we're reining Ren in. But it's all good experience for handling and training. So that's where Molly is at the moment. She's sort of just starting out on Kong and learning her indication. We've kind of got to the point where she knows she needs to sit and not touch it because she used to want to try and pick it up because everything needs to go in her mouth. We've got rid of the putting things in her mouth, and she's now sitting, but it's now getting her to sit and stare and, sit and look. But it's getting there. It's a process.
It'll get there. Yeah.
It will get there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. I think we've got three different threads I want to pull on before we go back to your continuing education talk. So why don't I'd love to just talk a little bit more about this decision to not continue working with River, because I'm sure that was hard for you. It sounds like you two have a really lovely working relationship, and she is really biddable and willing to work for and with you and try these things. So what, I guess the physical injury makes it a little clearer cut, but what was that decision-making like for you?
It was hard. It was quite upsetting, but I came to the decision that she doesn't owe me anything. I mean, she's won lots of things in her scent work competition stuff. She's now doing man training. I mean, she doesn't need to be operational to be happy. When it comes to the Spaniels, they live to work. It's a different sort of mindset. For River, she's quite happy to just bumble along, do a bit of this, do a bit of that. She doesn't need to work to feel like she's satisfied. Whereas Ren, trying to get her to rest on a rest day is the most difficult thing I've ever tried to do. She's there pulling on your top. She's barking at you. She's having a right fit about wanting to go out, whereas River's quite happy to chill out. So it was easier in the sense that she's not a needy dog that needs to work. But it was quite sad in a way that she probably could have done it if she didn't have the physical problem that we've got. But like I say, she doesn't owe me anything, so it's nice to just have her do bits and pieces that she can do. And she's still doing the man trailing, which is, again, helping me out learning more with her. So
totally,
that's the good thing about it. I don't think if she continued doing the operationally stuff, I don't think we would have done the man trailing. So I think there's a silver lining in every gray cloud.
Totally, I definitely, at some point, will need some sort of excuse to kick me in the butt to do, like, I would love to do some sort of like 6 week man trailing tracking, like intensive thing with one of my dogs at some point in my career and just really kind of learn how to do it. It's not going to happen while I'm in a PhD program, which I don't think we've talked about. You're in a PhD program. How are you doing all of this? I'm drowning.
I know. You're in your first year.
Yeah.
I think the first year is probably where you do drown a bit because you've got so much research to do. I'm in my last half a year, so I've got about 6 months to do my writing up and then I'm done. So I should finish this summer.
Okay.
Where do I start with the PhD? I'm at Plymouth and I'm doing a PhD on lowland peatland restoration and water quality. That's working with Wessex Water, Natural England and the RSPB, which is quite nice because I'm still in the loop of the ecological side of things. I'm in my final year, so we're writing up the thesis, which is heavy. And trying to reel everything in, tie all the loose ends and get everything on paper is such a massive job. But starting early is definitely helping. The PhD is going. It's in the background of everything else that I do.
That's crazy. That's so cool, though. And I didn't realize it's related to, conservation and ecology, but it's, I didn't realize that it was separate, separate from the dog stuff.
Yeah, it's a shame that I couldn't incorporate them with it, but there wasn't anything really, unless I wanted to go into, like, water leak detection, which I don't think I'm fully set up or ready to even do myself, because like that's so mind-blowing.
It's amazing, but sounds hard.
But I'm just thinking, like, the setup they need, just drinking water for the dogs, I'm like, you can't even use tap water for that or something like that. The setup for that would be quite complicated, but definitely something I would be interesting to learn about, because I know there's a few down here in the southwest of the UK. I saw a post.
So yeah, there was a really good talk at that at the Australasian Conservation Dog Conference a couple of years ago from someone who did it. I think that's where I heard.
I heard of them. So it is quite separate but quite related. It covers quite a broad range of ecological monitoring, so looking at plants and vegetation on the wetlands and before and after restoration on the peatlands. So what we've been doing is looking at the water quality on the Somerset levels. It's quite poor phosphorus. They're in a rate of decline in the quality, and the peatland is also in degrade. So we're trying to look at ways of reducing phosphorus and also improving the peatland. Doing vegetation surveys and looking at the invertebrates, then also taking the water quality sampling all before restoration. So they took some diggers on site and dig some scrapes and pools and ponds, and now I'm testing the after effects of how has that affected the ecology on there. Has it improved the biodiversity? Has it improved the water quality? All of those sort of things. So it's quite broad in the way of monitoring, so it's quite nice to have quite a broad PhD.
yeah that's very neat. Well, okay, so I want to go back now to, I think we'll tackle breed selection and then we'll be able to dive into, because the man trailing stuff, I think, ties into your continuing education. So, you know, so what is it like working with a Dalmatian? I know that River isn't operational, but what is it like? And, you know, particularly, why was a Spaniel your next thought versus a Shepherd, a Collie, a cattle dog, Lab? You know, what were your thoughts there? Go ahead.
So I'll start with River and working with Dalmatian. Very similar mindset to a pointer, I would say. They're quite independent. They're very opinionated, as I've heard quite a few reports from pointer owners. It sounds quite a lot like a Dalmatian. They like to chat and talk and tell you their opinion. Intelligent. Extremely intelligent breeds. A Dalmatian, she thinks, like, her problem solving, she just gets it. And I quite like that about her. She's a problem solver. She will solve problems. And that made her quite good for the scent detection side of things, because she would work odor, she would problem solve it. And she was quite clear-minded in that sense, compared to something like a Springer or a Cocker. With my experience with the Springers and the Cockers, they're a bit more black and white, whereas River would overthink things, which can it can hold her back in a way. Her overthinking can hold her back, because then she overthinks things and like stares and silly things, you know. You think that she's doing it for years and years, and then suddenly she overthinks it and then it becomes an issue.
Yeah. That does sound very pointery, you're right.
Yeah. So she's been an interesting breed to work, and she's always good fun to work. I mean, she's a bit of a goofball as well. They're quite clowny. They're always a class clown.
She sounds fun. I mean, I know Dals have a lot of working, you know, behind them. They're just not a typical breed. So then when you were thinking about, you know, we already talked a little bit about how you were looking for a Springer, but what, before you got your Cocker, what led you to Springer, Cocker, instead of, like a Lab or a Shepherd or a Collie, you know, some of these other common breeds? Not that the Springer is an odd choice, but I'm just curious about everyone's thought process go through it.
So from Dalmatian, I'd decided I wanted more of a working breed that was sort of easier to build that drive, should already have a drive there. Whereas the Dalmatian, like you say, they're not from working stock anymore, so they sort of lose that drive that you're looking for. So you've got to then build it all back up, or be lucky that they have a bit of that drive. So I was thinking Labrador, Springer, Cockers, some sort of gun dog breed. And I stuck with the Springers and the Cockers, because of size for where I'm living at the moment, it was just a Labrador, another big dog like River. It's two big dogs then. I'm thinking, you know, money, feeding them wise, space. I'm just thinking a spaniel's going to be a bit easier to fit in and sneak in the front door as well. So yeah, I was looking for a Springer, because I thought that'd be a nice, easier introduction to spaniels rather than getting a cocker, because that's a bit of like throwing yourself in the deep end. But then I ended up with a cocker and
did it anyway.
And yeah, it was a lovely learning curve, and I think I learned a lot as a handler through it. So I definitely don't regret it, because she's absolutely lovely working dog. Can't fault her work ethic. And she definitely made me a better handler at the end of it. So that was good.
I'm looking at, I don't know, between Springers and Cockers yet for my next dog. We'll see. But yeah, it's interesting to hear kind of all the differences. And, you know, and my next dog is probably 5-6 years away. And, you know, Barley is going to go before then. And ideally, I'm not getting another dog until I'm done with the PhD.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't want to be puppy raising during thesis writing, I don't think. We'll see. We'll revisit this in a couple of years and see whether or not I'm able to stick to my own plan. Y'all will hear it first. I mean, we'll see. It's easy to have these plans, as you know, you went in thinking Springer and whoops. I love it. I mean, yeah. Really cool thinking about all the different breeds. The size considerations makes perfect sense. I know that's usually my response to German Shepherd people when they ask me why I don't have a German Shepherd or Mals. It's just like, yeah, I rent. I live in a tiny place. I have a tiny car. I can't fit a crash-proof crate for either of those breeds in either of the vehicles I own. And I want a dog I can carry out of the woods if something horrible happens.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, I could probably do a smaller female Mal or Lab, but, you know, it's hard when you're purchasing a puppy to know that they're going to stay the right size.
So. Yeah, I think if I went back and did it again, I would, or if I'm buying a new one, I would definitely look at those year-old dogs that have already gone through puppy stage and assessing. And I would get a Labrador. Maybe in the future, that small Labrador, like you say, that you can carry. I mean, River, she's what, 23 kilograms? And I can carry that on my shoulders. So we've tried. And I think any sort of Labrador, Springer, Cocker mix is something that I would look for.
So River is actually not much bigger than Barley. 23 kilos is 50 pounds.
Yeah, she's all legs.
Yeah,
all legs.
And Barley's fat right now, and he is 52 pounds, so he actually weighs more than River right now. but he normally sits around 47 pounds, which is, maybe like 19 kilos. And Niffler's not much smaller than that either. He's skinny, but he still weighs probably close to that as well. So that's surprising.
No, she's not a big Dalmatian at all. She's really tiny. I wouldn't go any bigger than that, I think, personally, because I am a small person. No. So trying to carry something huge is, like you say, it's quite hard if something happens in the field.
Yeah. And especially, you know, if you're looking at some of these breeds can really get to double that size. I could do a little bit more than either of my dogs, but I'd really struggle if I was looking at, you know, a 90-pound Lab or German Shepherd. And, you know, most of the time, if they're in working shape, they're generally not that big. Those are usually overweight dogs, but not always. You know, some of them are
some
that
them are
big.
Muffled.
Just
yeah.
Some of them are that big because they are in shape. So okay, but we need to talk about continuing education, because that's why I invited you here. Then there's too much to talk about. This is why I love this podcast. So why don't we start it with man trailing? Because that's like a totally different discipline. What are you kind of seeing as you develop your handling skills and like scent theory skills from learning about scent that's on the ground instead of air scenting? That's a huge shift that I don't know nothing about.
I thought, well, taking River from area search scent work to something completely different, follower scent, I thought, oh, is she going to struggle with that? But actually, after the first session, she switched on pretty quickly. The first trail she did, I'm a bit confused. And then the second trail she did, she went, I know, I'll indicate on this. And that's not what we wanted. But she had a problem solved that, no, we did not want you to indicate on the article. We wanted you to find the person it belonged to. After that sort of through her brain. Yeah. After that went through her brain. And you can see all that, because she's such, like I say, she's such an expressive dog. You'd see her working it all out. And then she goes, oh, I see what you mean. I need to go and follow. And after that day, she was getting it really great. So they start off with intensity start. So they get to see the person. They jizz them all up like, way, let's go and find this person. And they run off and it all becomes quite exciting. So you get these really high intensity starts. And then they eventually start reducing the intensity starts to a delayed intensity. So they see the person walk away, but then they have to delay the track so that they don't go running after them instantly, sort of got a little gap between, make them think what they've got to do. And then eventually you start with just the article, not seeing the person walk off. So yeah, it was, it's very interesting to watch her work the scent, because with the trailing, it's slightly different from the tracking. They're following footprints in the ground. It's quite detailed. They should follow exact footfall. Whereas the trailing is following the scent. So the scent, if it's on a windy day, could be going all over the shop. And it will go and attach like to trees or to vegetation, to buildings, you know. So your dog might not trail the exact route the person went, but they will be following that scent wherever the scent is the strongest. So yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. So what else are you working on lately? What other like classes and seminars and stuff have you been going to lately? Because I know there's been quite a few that I've seen you posting about.
Yeah, I mean, last year I did, obviously I did my handler courses and things. So I've done several handler courses. College of Scent Dogs, they did a handler and instructor qualifications, which I did both. That was a general understanding, basic skill set for general detection dog handling. So planning searches, search system, coverage of large areas. And then I did the instructor course on that, furthering the knowledge. And then also learning how to teach others. So I do pet dog classes and workshops and with more experienced pet search teams. I do set up searches for them as well. During my time on that handler course, instructor course, I used Ren mainly, and that was back when she was probably only like a year old, so she was still in that sort of dodgy stage, but that was a really good experience for her to search new areas, because a lot of it was indoor, so she was really okay in indoor environments, so I could really see her develop. And she was only a year old doing all of these massive indoor searches. I was very impressed with her. So that was a really good course to attend. I've been attending canine behaviour consultancy workshops with Kat. I did one with her last year. She did a play and engagement. I love anything to do with like play, learning how to play with your dog properly, because with Ren it was so big trying to get her to play with like a human who she did, you know, she don't like humans. So getting her to play and engage with me was great. And so I love going on any sort of play workshop. So we went on that one, and that was really nice. Something a bit different.
Yeah.
Also completed your course, online canine conservation handler course online. Again, brilliant. Information all in one place, expanding my knowledge further, especially in the ododynamic side of things.
I was actually going to ask, like, genuinely not trying to do an ad here or anything, but given all of your other education, was there anything that, stood out to you? You can tell us the stuff you hated, maybe offline, but...
definitely the odor dynamic side of things, because I feel like the previous course that I had done didn't really cover much odor dynamics mm-hmm. side of things. So when you guys were covering all of that, I was like, this is mind blowing. Oh my God, I can like plan my searches so much better now because I know what the scent might be doing in those sort of environmental conditions. And I'm also now reading a book, Detector Dogs and Scent Movement.
You probably I love that book.
God, super interesting. And understanding again how it all moves, affects by the environment, explaining why, like River, when she's doing her trailing or when you're doing an area search, why how it affects and differs. They might have unusual behavior. Like I did a search with Wren in high winds, and it took her ages just to try and, you know, find and get to the odor because she was all over the shop with all this high wind.
Yeah.
So it's not always like, you know, textbook, bang, bang, promy alert, find it, you know, indicate done. Sometimes it takes so much longer to find if you've got all these other factors involved. And it's just having that appreciation and not getting frustrated with your dog that it's not, you know, finding instantly, but allowing them to work the odor properly and source it properly. So having appreciation on odor dynamics was a nice one to have on that course. It really stuck.
Yeah.
And then again,
that's great. Yeah.
And then November, I think, was my last recent course. I completed the Lantra Conservation Detection Dog Handler course. And again, very comprehensive course, full of theory and practical. They had dogs there that we could handle that were a mixture of operational and then semi, like nearly ready to be operational, and then some green dogs that were literally at the beginning of their training. And then you're formally assessed at the end by the external instructor.
That's such a cool opportunity. Yeah, who did you say was through?
So Lantras, that's Kairos Canine.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they're based in Formby, so, yeah, north.
Yeah.
In the UK, north from me.
Like, I've never been south. To the UK. I know where nothing is.
So, yeah, north.
North, okay.
Yeah, I'm in Cornwall, so real low south, and everything is north from me. So it's always a trek. Always a trek to find these great courses, but like I say, you get to when I was there, you got to handle and have a mixture of different dogs, different levels, different breeds. So they had, you know, a mixture of Springers, Cockers, Labradors, Springadors, you know, you name it. They had and Shepherds as well. So you know, you got to have
the pointies.
Oh, they do have pointers, yeah. I did handle a pointer as well. So there you go.
Yeah, well, and sometimes in the U.S. we'll call them pointy versus floppy dogs. So you've got like the floppies that are the pointers floppy and the spaniels and the labs, and then the pointies are the German shepherds and pointy the mals. And it kind of tracks with some breed tendencies that differ between. And then you've got your border collie. So it's like I've got one pointy and one floppy border collie, and I don't think they actually. I don't, you know, the ear set doesn't actually mean anything about their personalities with them. But yeah, okay, but they did also have pointers. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminded me when you said that. I was like, they did have pointers. It was nice to have that course because I could then connect with other conservation detection dog handlers whilst I was there. And it's hopefully opening new doors and opportunities to work with others in the field, because now I've got a few more connections of people who've already done the course, you know, and getting your name out there that you're a competent handler. If they need an extra pair of hands, they know that, you've done the course, or if they recommend you, that, you know, you're going to be getting someone who's competent. It was a really good course, and it was brilliant to be able to handle all the different breeds and even be able to handle Wren during some of the searches as well.
Cool.
So it was quite nice to be able to involve her as well and do a bit of training with her.
Yeah, and it just seems so important. And it's so hard to find these hands-on in-person opportunities. You know, like almost all of my learning is online at this point, and I learn a ton. You know, this weekend I'm going to be working my way through the Canine Senses Foundation search strategy course. And that's going to be all online, but gosh, it would be really cool to actually get to go out with Robin Grubel and do a, you know, watch her plan an area search, or have her watch me do it and then give me feedback on all the, yeah, you know, crazy exactly. bad ideas I'm coming up with. Or maybe there's some good ones, but yeah,
just having someone there on your shoulder saying, yeah, do this, you're doing this, but you need to do it slightly different. And it makes so much more difference.
You can learn so much online, and there are just some things that kind of need to be done in person, particularly with the dog side of things. I think it's really hard to learn this stuff online.
Yeah, it's quite special though as well to be able to, you know, have that experience behind you and have those dogs there that have been fully trained and be able to handle them and not need to worry, oh, it's my dog. No, it's their dog, but they're just focusing on you rather than trying to focus mm-hmm. on your dog, that you can just, you know, focus on yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
I found that quite nice to be able to sort of focus on myself rather than be always focused on, you know, Ren and making sure she was being trained. It's quite nice to have a change of focus.
Definitely. I used to do a lot of dressage riding, and you don't put someone who doesn't know how to do dressage on an untrained horse. They put me at first on a horse that was basically gonna do the pattern no matter what my feet and seat and reins were doing. And then they moved me up to a horse where I was going to have to actually be careful about my weight and shifting and all of those sorts of things. And I am still years and years and years and years away from ever being able to think about training my own dressage horse. But, you know, that model is, I think, really common in the horse world and a little bit harder to find in the dog world, because again, you need someone who's got a facility that you can come to, and they need to have enough dogs, and they need to have dogs that can be handed around to different people, which aren't all dogs. That's such a cool opportunity, isn't it?
Having dogs that can be just given to any handler and their work, you know, for them. Mm-hmm. It takes quite a lot for the dogs to do as well. But it was brilliant, brilliant training.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up, or any, you know, have you had any kind of big wow moments through any of these classes lately that you'd be willing to share with us?
Big wows. I mean, this whole year for Ren has been a big wow. Just the way she's come on, and I, you've got that bond, and you know that she's there to work and she's there to do. And it's so special. So she's been a big wow this year. More of a little wow is River and her man trailing. That's quite nice. And just the fact that, you know, with an area search, you kind of direct your dog and you can go, oh, we missed mm-hmm. this bit. And you have a bit more control over everything. With the man trailing, you literally cannot do anything to help your dog, really. The dog has to do mm-hmm. pretty much the whole thing. The only thing that you can sort of do is help them sweep and find where the track might be and keep an eye on their body, you know, body language and where they're tracking and trailing and making sure that they're working. And if they, you know, stop working, making a note where you feel like they've stopped working. And then if you lose a trail, coming back to that and that area and searching for the trail again, you know, doing those handler bits. But other than that, it's all down to the dog, which is absolutely amazing. It was so mind-blowing for me, because I felt at the end of the line I felt so helpless because I could not help her at all. That was quite crazy. So I'm a bit blown away about the man trailing side of things.
Yeah. Has there been anything that maybe you find yourself repeating to yourself or reminding yourself or coming back to a lot from any of these courses? I know the one that I've been thinking about a lot lately, actually Crystal Wing said it in one of the recent Canine Detection Collaborative podcasts, where she was talking about this framework of I like, I wish, I wonder, which I think she uses with her art students. So there's something that you like about a training session, something that you wish could have gone differently, and then something you wonder, you know, I wonder if I had done this, what would have happened, or I wonder if we go and train this and then come back to a similar puzzle, what that will look like. And I've been really trying to use that framework as I'm doing video review, or even if I didn't video a session, but thinking back on it and trying to find stuff that I like about what I'm doing, and also finding areas where I can actually name some areas of improvement, particularly for Barley. I think I tend to get in these ruts where I think that Barley is just good, and he is, and he's brilliant. But I think I can and should continue to push him, and that I wish I wonder is helpful for reminding myself to do that with him, while also being a little kinder to myself as a handler sometimes. No. Yeah. I don't know if you've got anything like that. That was a very long, poorly worded question.
I think the one thing that has stuck with me recently with the course I've done with the conservation detection course was, don't be so rigid in your search plan. So I used to handle Ren and have a search plan, and I would get stuck somewhere because she hasn't covered this one area properly. So I would stop, and she would be doing her business and doing her searching somewhere else, and leave me in the dust because I've gone, you haven't searched this area. So I constantly remind myself to be more fluid with her, be more flexible with my search plans. Mm-hmm. And if she decides she wants to go and search over there, let her go search over there, go with her, and just remember where you need to go back to. And it's fine. You can go back to it. So I think that's the one thing that I've taken from that course is, definitely just be a bit more relaxed, be a bit more fluid with the search plan, and let Ren do her job rather than trying to dictate to her all the time where to go. So yeah, stop being so controlling.
No, I love that. And I know when I was shadowing Amy Hurt in the field back when I worked at Working Dogs for Conservation, she had a really great tactic. If she had a bright bandana that was kind of attached to her backpack, and we were out doing kind of prairie searches, so it was really, really hard. If you left your transect, it was really hard to like see where to go back to because there was no landmarks. So she would pull out that bandana and kind of lay it on the vegetation if we had to follow the dog off track. And then we could really easily kind of see that and come back to it. Because obviously, you know, you've got your GPS, but it's really nice to have that visual marker. And I've really liked that system and being able to watch. Again, going back to this, like, I don't know if Amy was teaching a class, if that's something she would even think to include in the curriculum, but watching her do it in the field, I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, like having a post or something you can stick in the ground, mm-hmm. or a flag or something that
I use flagging tape a lot of the time.
Something like that. And just being a bit flexible with the search because, I'm quite a bit of a perfectionist where I just want perfect transects, mm-hmm. boop, 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 boop. but it doesn't work like that sometimes. So you've got to be a bit flexible.
Yeah. Well, neat. Well, is there anything that, you wanted to bring back or and explore a bit more, or something I didn't ask you about, anything like that?
I think that's most of what I've got on my reminder sheet to talk about, because I put notes down.
Are a perfectionist. You are so prepared.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess if that's it, then, I really appreciated getting to talk to you. It's so fun to actually finally get to meet you and hear more about all of these dogs that I've been admiring online for years now. It's been so fun to watch your journey, and I'm so excited to see where you get to go once you're finally done with school. You know, good luck with all of that. I'm really in awe of the fact that you are doing all of this on top of school, because I feel like I'm in my first year, but I feel like I'm struggling a lot to figure out how to fit it in, even though my dogs are part of my thesis, figuring out how to fit in the training and the continuing education that, Oregon State University doesn't have a detection dog handler class that I can take for credit that counts towards my PhD. It all has to be paid for separately, and it all has to come out of other quote unquote spare time, as if that really exists. I'm really, really impressed by you and the fact that you've been able to do so much of that throughout your PhD. It's very cool.
Yeah, I know. It's been a bit of a journey, but a slow close.
Yeah, and I hope you get to take a very long nap once you hit submit on that thesis. Just go nap for 3 years.
I found that my excuses with dogs were more of a, oh, it's meant for mental health. I'm allowed to take breaks because then I can go for a nice long walk with the dogs. And it was quite nice to be able to break up the day in front of the laptop. It really has helped.
Definitely.
Having a separate focus. So when I do come back to the thesis and the PhD stuff, I've got a fresh mind. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I just reset up my brick wall in the backyard, and it's been really nice to be able to be like, okay, I don't have to set aside 2 hours to go drive somewhere, set out a huge area search, get the dogs, run them both through it, you know, get them all cleaned up afterwards because it's Oregon. So it's super muddy here. It is so wet. Every single time I take the dogs outside, it's an ordeal to get them back inside. Now I'm just whining, but but having the brick wall is so nice because now if I've been, you know, staring at my laptop for 3 hours, I can go and take them out and do, I trained both dogs and felt like I did a really good job of it yesterday. And I went back and watched the video and I did both dogs in 7 minutes and they were tired.
Even just going out into the garden, doing a bit of vindication stuff. I've done that before. I'm quite lucky though, because I have fields and things quite close by that I can literally walk to and just run Ren through a quick search, and she's done.
Yeah.
You know, she's quite happy with that for the rest of the day. So it's been
so
quite
do
lucky.
I. I'm just whiny. So, well, cool. So yeah, remind us where everyone can find you online. I know I've been talking up your Instagram and stuff throughout this episode, but where can people find you online? And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, so we've got Facebook, Instagram, we've got our website. It's all under NHU Ecology and Detection Dogs. And YouTube.
What does the NHU stand for?
My name.
That makes
Natasha.
Sense. Yeah.
Natasha Hazel Underwood. That's all it is.
That's all it is. Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I think in my head I was like, is this... Well, before I realized you were in the UK for the longest time, I was reading it as New Hampshire University. And then I was like, oh, no, it must... And then she's in the UK, so it can't be New Hampshire. That's here. And yeah, just... I assumed it was a place. Or university, because all the U.S. universities have like the 3-letter acronyms that end in U. Like there's OSU So anyway, all right. Well, we'll link all of that in the show notes, and if you can send over links to some of the courses that you've taken, or at least the folks that you took them through, then we'll be sure to give them a shout out in the show notes if anyone wants to figure out how to take those classes as well. We'll make sure to include those. So thank you again. And for everyone at home, I hope that you learned a lot and are feeling inspired to get outside and be a canine conservationist in whatever way suits your passions and skill set. Maybe you also are going to get an accidental Cocker Spaniel, who knows? We'll be back in 2 weeks with another great episode and another great guest. Until then, bye.